Welcome back to the Below Average Joe's MMA Show. Today we talk about all things UFC 298, the first of three straight absolute banger UFC pay-per-views this weekend in Anaheim, California, headlined by the featherweight champion Alexander Volkanovski coming back to his weight class of 145 pounds to look to defend his title for the sixth consecutive time against Ilya Topuria, the young stud that is undefeated and hungry as ever for a championship. I'll also talk about the rest of the main card that is loaded with ranked fighters from top to bottom, some of the other quick hitters on the prelims, and we'll get into a few fight announcements and adjustments to the UFC Atlantic City card happening March 30th. Let's get into the main event, UFC 298, Volkanovski versus Topuria. Alexander Volkanovski has been the featherweight champion of the world in the UFC for longer than his opponent this weekend, Ilya Topuria, has even been inside the organization. What does that mean? Will the experience and competition that Volkanovski has faced play the biggest difference, or will the young hungry lion in Topuria be too much to handle? As we are seeing Volkanovski return on a very short notice, or not short notice, but short turnaround, I should say, after getting knocked out at the end of October by Islam Makhachev. Let's discuss this fight, the implications, and the featherweight title on the line. Alexander Volkanovski versus Ilya Topuria goes down this Saturday at UFC 298 in Anaheim, California, and there's only one huge thing that I can't get off my mind. Let me go down this rabbit hole with you guys. So there's two fights that Volkanovski versus Topuria is giving me the vibes of, or just really is drilling them into my head, and I can't get them out of my mind until I display them here for you all, and I'm excited for you to hear this and give me all your thoughts on it. So the first fight is in the featherweight division, and it happened December 12th, 2015, when a unbeatable, for a very long time, featherweight champion, Jose Aldo, was welcoming Conor McGregor in for an undisputed title shot. Jose Aldo was in his prime. He had defended the featherweight championship in the UFC numerous times, much like Volkanovski, who is now 35 years old, but a lot of people would argue that's right on the tail end for your prime and maybe just getting into your prime, depending on the weight class. And we'll get into that narrative as well here in a little bit, because that's a whole other story. Five title defenses as well for Volkanovski going into this fight against Topuria. A lot of similarities there. Two guys that have even fought each other. And what led to, inevitably, Volkanovski becoming the champion was getting a win over Jose Aldo at one point in his career. We go to the other side in the blue corner, where we have Ilya Topuria, who is 14-0, and Conor McGregor wasn't undefeated overall in his professional career going into that fight with Aldo. However, they are both 6-0, undefeated in the UFC, heading into their first undisputed title fight. And yes, I'm alluding to that word undisputed because Conor did get an interim fight against Chad Mendes, and he did win that fight to then earn the undisputed shot against Jose Aldo. So there is a little bit of a difference there when you look at how they got there, the interim championship. However, the story remains the same. The young, hungry lion, an entire country behind him, Ireland behind Conor, Spain behind Topuria, both in their surging years, those late 20s, heading in to the prime. And here we are now. Conor was able to make history and knock out the king of Rio, Jose Aldo, in 13 seconds. Is the same fate going to happen with Alexander Volkanovski? And on the opposite end of the spectrum, the second fight that is drilled into my brain this week is that of which something that happened in 2020 when we had Israel Adesanya versus Paulo Costa. We look at the champion side of that situation. Israel Adesanya was 9-0 in the UFC, and he didn't quite have the title defenses stacked up just yet, but he did have an interim championship victory, an undisputed championship victory, and one title defense heading into this fight. And for Paulo, he was 5-0 in the UFC with four finishes, Well, Ilia Topuria also has 4 finishes so far in his UFC career as he was heading into the biggest fight of his life, a title shot against Israel Adesanya. Oh, and by the way, he was also undefeated, much like Ilia Topuria, heading into that championship fight. But it didn't quite end the same for Paulo as it did for Conor McGregor because he got dismantled, to be quite frank, by Israel Adesanya. So with those two examples, we have one where the young, rising, hot prospect, undefeated in the UFC with finishes, you know, personality that people can either love or hate, but they're gonna bring eyes to their fights. And Conor McGregor gets the victory and knocks out a legend. On the other side of the coin, we have the young, shiny prospect, undefeated, overall undefeated in the UFC, getting finishes in Paulo Costa, where he falls short and gets beaten by the what turned into be long-reigning champion, much like Volkanovski, in Israel Adesanya. So I just had to go down that rabbit hole there. Thank you for bearing with me. If you did, please let me know in the comments below what you think of those comparisons. Are you getting any of those vibes? Are there any other fights, championship fights in particular, that are giving you the same vibes as this Volkanovski versus Topuria fight? Please let me know. And as we just dig a little deeper here before we get to the rest of the card, we have to just look here at the storyline of this fight, if you will. The attention surrounding this fight is all because of Alexander Volkanovski and what happened at the end of 2023. So yes, he loses in October to Islam Makhachev, and you know, it is what it is. He's 0-2 at lightweight, but that's not his weight class. He is the long-reigning champion, 5 title defenses, 13 straight victories at 145 pounds. But it's not the loss, it's the way in which he lost, by a vicious head kick knockout followed up by strikes by Islam Makhachev, and that was less than 4 months ago. Having this quick of a turnaround paired with someone in Ilia Topuria who, say what you want about the guy and, you know, his wins and who his big knockouts are against, his big finishes, he is dangerous anywhere the fight goes. He has one punch, shut your lights out power. If you just see the Jai Herbert fight, he is dangerous. He is hungry. He is young. He is surging. And he has all of the momentum. And for once, it doesn't feel like Volk has momentum. And the other storyline, again, more so to the side of Volk, is the age and the stats that go against it. He put out an incredible video kind of skit, if you will, with a, I don't know if it was an Australia/New Zealand-based betting company, but they based it all around the, is he too old, the 35 years old, you know, 4-31 or whatever those records are when they're facing 35 and older at featherweight through welterweight. It's a very deep, in-depth stat, and everybody's talking to him. I listened to an interview today where Michael Bisping is bringing it up. Volkanovski is even acknowledging this, going as far as filming that skit, talking about it in interviews, making it known that he is aware. It is fresh of mind for him, but being as stoic as he always has been, if there's anyone that this number won't affect, I think it would be someone like Alexander Volkanovski. And I'm far from the discussion that he is past his prime or he's now on a downslope. He lost twice to the number one fighter in the world, Islam Makhachev. Once on short notice, by the way, when he got knocked out. And it's just up a weight class at 155 pounds. It isn't where he has been the champion for the past 5 years, where he has beaten the greatest of all time in the division in Jose Aldo, in Max Holloway. The only two people that can be considered better than Alexander Volkanovski at 145 pounds, he has beaten and done it convincingly. He even had to beat Max 3 times. These two fighters are combined 40-3, 19-2 in the UFC. It is as high level a title fight as I think you can schedule right now in the UFC, especially if I'm going off the top of my head. One that would maybe rival it would be like Islam Makhachev versus Arman Tsarukyan 2, but that doesn't seem to be the case, obviously, because Arman's fighting Charles. So right now, this is as good as it gets if you're talking high-level mixed martial arts. The biggest worry is the quick turnaround after a brutal knockout finish on the side of Volkanovski. Other than that, I think this is an incredible fight with so many different paths for both fighters. Two fighters that are so well-rounded and polished in all aspects of their game. The experience in the resume, the competition that Volk has faced is something that Ilya cannot match. He's beaten Bryce Mitchell. He's beaten Josh Emmett in an incredible performance, mind you, against Josh Emmett. A masterful performance. But Volk has put on masterful performances time and time again against Max Holloway, against Yair Rodriguez, against the Korean Zombie, has went through the fire against Brian Ortega and still came out on the winning side. You know, and Ilya, you can say, has faced a little bit of fire. Look at that Jai Herbert fight. He got brutally hit and almost knocked out before getting a highlight reel finish in that one. So I love everything about this fight. It doesn't get better than this. And I'm so happy that this isn't like playing second fiddle to a bigger weight class on a pay-per-view card. This absolutely deserves the main event slot. And so at UFC 298, the main event slot, they will get. And now that I am done talking about the incredible UFC 298 main event, it's time to talk about the rest of this card because it is unbelievable, especially this main card. We start in the co-main event, the former middleweight champion Robert Whittaker taking on the former middleweight title challenger Paulo Costa. Paulo Costa is back for the first time since one of the weirdest fights in recent memory against Luke Rockhold in August of 2022, where he did come out on the winning side of things, but has only fought one other time since losing his title fight to Israel Adesanya in September of 2020, and that was in a losing effort to Marvin Vettori in a fight where Paulo didn't want to make 185 pounds, so they fought at 205 pounds. Turned out to be a pretty incredible back and forth 25-minute fight between the two, if I'm being honest with you. But he's back. A little bit less drama than the past two fights, it seems. He's got the secret juice. We do know that. And is the secret juice enough to get a humongous win, launch himself back into the top three, and right back into title contention for the first time in nearly 4 years? As he takes on Bobby Knuckles. Robert Whittaker's coming in, having lost two of his last three fights. Both of those losses are to champions, one in which was a title fight against Israel Adesanya, and the second fight was to the now current middleweight champion, Dricus du Plessis. That happened in July of 2023. Sandwiched in between is a victory over Marvin Vettori. But if we look at that fight against Dricus, and I'll just be transparent here, going into that, I felt ultra confident in Robert Whittaker to not only win that fight, but to get a big finish. I didn't think that what we had seen from Dricus was enough to beat the well-roundedness and polished skill set that Robert Whittaker has. But somehow, some way, not only did it age poorly there, but that take has aged even worse because Dricus is now the middleweight champion of the world, and I still don't know what his fight style is. But whatever it is, it not only earned him a championship victory over Sean Strickland in January of this year, but a knockout victory over Robert Whittaker, something that only Israel Adesanya has done to Robert Whittaker in the middleweight division prior to July of 2023. Bobby Knuckles, a long layoff. He hasn't been as active the past few years, but he's back now, February of 2024, surely recovered from that knockout loss and looking to bounce back. He's a relatively big favorite, I believe, around the minus 250 range. And Paulo Costa, I don't even know. What do we say about Paulo Costa? We haven't seen enough of him since that title fight against Izzy back in 2020. Prior to that, the dude was ultra active, getting big finishes, fighting all the time. And something about that just changed the man. Maybe he just needed more secret juice and it's been on short supply the past few years. But I'm excited for this fight. Both these guys combining together is a hard fight to try and predict. Like, could I see Whittaker getting a real clean victory? Maybe even a finish like Israel Adesanya did against Paulo? Maybe. But could I see Paulo forcing it to be an ugly dogfight, kind of like how he did against Luke Rockhold and how Dricus did in beating Robert Whittaker. Both these guys kind of have tape semi-recently to go against the other, and I think that makes this a very intriguing bout. It definitely has implications in the middleweight title picture, probably more so for Paulo Costa just because he hasn't been in the mix in a while. He would be more of a fresh face into the title contention status. Robert Whittaker has been in title contention for 27 years at this point. He's been the champion. He's fought numerous times to earn his title back and so forth, being in number one contender bouts. So I'm not saying Robert, with a big win, can't be in the mix. He absolutely is. He's number three in the world for a reason. You add in that Dricus is the champion. They have a built-in story. He could definitely fight his way, insert himself, I should say, back into the mix. But for Paulo Costa, this is a big opportunity. He's a big personality that people like to watch fight. And if you beat Robert Whittaker, if you finish Robert Whittaker, I think he's going to be next up for a 185-pound title shot. That is assuming we don't have a title fight coming soon with Dricus. UFC 300, what's going on? Maybe he's fighting Khamzat Chimaev. Maybe he's running it back with Sean Strickland. Maybe he's fighting Leon Edwards coming up to 185. I don't really know what's going on for Dricus, but I know if you're him, you got close eyes on the co-main event at UFC 298. One fight down and one weight class down at welterweight, Jeff Neal, the number 8 ranked 170-pound fighter in the world, will be taking on the number 10 ranked Ian Machado Gary in a grudge match in the featured bout. Ian Machado Gary, the welterweight Conor McGregor, the Cage Warriors champion from Ireland, has made a name for himself. Whether that's positively or negatively, he's bringing eyes to his fights. That is one thing for certain. And Jeff Neal is the complete opposite. A quiet, reserved guy that when he gets in the cage can have fantastic fights. Ian Gary is 6-0 in the UFC since entering in the octagon in November of 2021. So now coming in for his 7th fight, looking to crack into the top 10. Yes, he's ranked number 10, but now you got to break in to the top 10. And he gets that opportunity against Hands of Steel, Jeff Neal. And I'm telling you, based off of the fight that Ian had against Neil Magny back in August in Boston, if he... How do I put this? I'm not trying to sound critical because at one point I was skeptical and more critical of Ian Machado Gary. You know, those early fights, the Jordan Williams fight, his debut, he was losing that fight before getting a knockout at the end of the first round. Then he fought Gabriel Green, Darian Weeks. He got decision victories, wasn't able to do anything super meaningful, kind of just fights that are forgettable. Against Song Kinan, he gets knocked down, but then he pulled it out the fire, as Leon Edwards' coach would say, comes back, put on a beautiful, masterful performance, really, in that fight outside of that one moment, and got a knockout finish. And that's when I started to change my mind on his potential in the ceiling. And then he beat Daniel Rodriguez. He knocked out Daniel Rodriguez in the first round. Then I'm like, okay, now we really have something here with Ian Machado Gary. And he started getting into the headlines for... He wore a shirt with Jeff Neal's mugshot on it. That's why these two don't have a very good relationship, if you will. I'm excited. I'm recording this before the press conference, so I'm excited to see how that will go as well. Being that Jeff Neal is such a reserve guy and Ian is not that whatsoever. He was supposed to fight Jeff Neal in August. Jeff Neal had to pull out, I believe, due to injury. In stepped Neal Magny, the other Neal at 170 pounds. Ian Machado Gary fought a good fight. He looked clean, was winning the fight thoroughly for 15 minutes. I felt it was lacking a finish. And I know it's so much easier said than done. I'm not a fighter. I don't train. I get it. You can't just go in there and finish everyone. But he had Neil Magny essentially fighting on one leg. And instead of pulling the trigger and just hammering it until Neil could not stand on it anymore, he kind of just left him in there, and I don't know, he said he wanted to teach him a lesson and drag it out 15 minutes. I don't know, I just didn't see any finishing prowess there, and what I felt would have been a big opportunity for him to do that, kind of clear his name of some of the nasty, or not even nasty, but just the drama, if you will. And then it got worse deeper into the year in like December and whatnot, then a fight was scratched there. But we're back, UFC 298. featured bout on a pay-per-view, and he's taken on Jeff Neal, who, when he's on, he's one of the best welterweights in the world. That is why he is number 8 in the world. His last fight was in March 2023 against the undefeated Phenom, Shavkat Rakhmonov, in an electric fight. If you have not seen that fight prior to this weekend, you need to go watch it because it was an awesome fight. One where Jeff Neal was absolutely in it all the way until Shavkat got a finish at the end of the third round. But Jeff Neal, it was anybody's ball game. They were going at it. It was a banger. And if Jeff Neal can bring that type of fight to Ian Garry, that is absolutely something Garry has not had to deal with. Yes, he got knocked down by Song Kinan, but Song wasn't bringing a fight like Jeff Neal was to Shavkat Rakhmonov. And prior to that, he had beaten Vicente Luque by knockout. He had beaten Santiago Ponzinibbio. I'm telling you, a healthy Jeff Neal is a dangerous, dangerous man. And it sucks he had to go through that very brutal illness a few years back that kind of took some prime time away from him. But I do still think he can climb these ranks. He can approach that championship contender status. And for all I know, earn a championship opportunity to fight for the belt. But if you don't beat Ian Machado Garry here, that delays all the plans. And with the hatred built in, I think we're going to get a statement made by one of these two fighters Saturday night. And next we move to the 135-pound division, one of the most stacked top-to-bottom weight classes in the entire sport right now. We have the number 2-ranked Merab Dwalishwili taking on the former flyweight champion and former bantamweight championship contender and champion, actually. I can't forget, he was a double champion. Triple C, Henry Cejudo. Henry Cejudo just turned 37 years old on February 9th, so just a few days ago, about a week removed from the time we are getting this fight with him and Merab at UFC 298, a former two-weight world champion, a former Olympic gold medalist, one of the best combat sports athletes of all time. But he is acknowledging the fact that if he can't keep up with Aljamain Sterling, in which he lost a title fight with, if he can't keep up with a number one contender in Merab, then maybe it's time to hang it up. And he's been open and honest about that. He's hinted that if he doesn't get a victory here Saturday night, it may be time to retire for good. And it's not going to come easy. That's a tall task he has ordered against Merab. Henry Cejudo returned May 6th of 2023, nearly 3 years to the day from the night that he retired in a bantamweight championship fight where he defended the belt against Dominic Cruz. That was May 9th of 2020. So he's been out of action since last May. Prior to that, had a three-year gap. He's clearly still very much active. He has a fantastic gym. He's become a very good coach to a lot of fighters. Zhang Weili is a very prominent name, who is the women's strawweight champion of the world. She's went to Arizona and trained with Henry Cejudo. And he's made some changes. They had kind of a weird moment where he got rid of his coach Eric, the guy with the cool funky glasses that is always in the corner. He's also a Paulo Costa guy, or at least at one point was as well. So I don't know what's all going on in the Henry Cejudo camp, but you can't carry baggage when you're fighting Merab because you got to be on your A game from the opening bell. Otherwise, you're going to be on your back foot for up to 15 straight minutes. Merab is right in the prime years, 33 years old, 16-4. He came into the UFC in 2017. He lost to Frankie Sinez. He lost to Ricky Simone. Got finished, as a matter of fact, by Ricky Simone. But has since rallied off. Let's count it here together. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 straight victories. And you look at the latter half of this. A dominant victory over Petr Yan. Jose Aldo he defeats. He defeats Marlon Moraes, Cody Stamann, John Dodson prior to that. John Dodson was a former title challenger, albeit, or mind you. So Merab is an absolute dog. That win streak right there earns anyone else a title shot. And part of it is Merab's fault. He didn't want to fight his teammate Aljamain Sterling, but now he doesn't have to worry about that anymore. Aljamain is moving to 145 pounds, will be facing Calvin Kattar at UFC 300, a fight that I don't think is getting the shine that it deserves. I'm very excited for that fight. I digress. Merab wins here against a former two-weight world champion. he's at that point undeniable. I feel like you already had the opportunity to do him and Sean O'Malley, guaranteeing that you get that fight. I feel like that's a better fight than the fight we're getting at 299 next month between Sean and Chito Vera in their rematch, because yes, there's one storyline there, and it's that Sean's trying to get that win back from a few years ago when Chito Vera beat him. You look at this fight here with Merab, there were two storylines. One, Sean O'Malley just dethroned Merab's best friend, Aljamain Sterling, and became the bantamweight champion of the world, which means Merab is now open to fight for the title. They get into the cage together. Merab is taking Sean O'Malley's jacket, the Thriller jacket. Now, I'll tell you right now, maybe Merab wore it better. I'm just going to be honest. I don't know. Let me know what you think. Who wore it better? I digress for the second time in this same discussion. This is a title shot fight. It's a number one contender fight. It's that simple. I don't know if Dana has come out and said as such. Maybe he will tonight at the press conference. Again, I'm recording this Thursday at 5 p.m. before the press conference happens. But if Merab wins, he's in, regardless of who wins next month. And if Henry wins, he's going to get in. I've come to the graphs. I've come to terms with that fact. And I don't think there would be like a trilogy should Sean O'Malley beat Chito Vera. There's not enough title defenses for Sean. I don't think there's a need to see a trilogy when we're going to have a clear number one contender just 1 month away from when that title gets defended. Very intriguing fight. Henry Cejudo, very well-rounded. An Olympic gold medalist with wrestling, obviously. That is his go-to, his forte. But it is for Merab as well. Someone who is absolutely relentless. He will not give up on his grappling and wrestling attacks until he gets you down. He will put you through the fence if he has to and tackle you into the first row if that means getting you down to the ground. If he brings that pace to Henry Cejudo, I'm going to be very much intrigued to see how Henry Cejudo will respond. Fantastic fight at 135 pounds. And kicking off the pay-per-view card is two middleweights, Anthony Fluffy Hernandez, ranked number 15, and Roman Kopylov. Both of these guys are on four-fight win streaks, two of the most underrated, I don't know, maybe they're not underrated. I feel like in the hardcore community on X or Twitter, I do see a lot of love for these guys, but I'm glad they're getting this spot on a pay-per-view to really take their name to the next level, to really shine here in a bright spot. I think this is going to be a very fun fight. Fluffy Hernandez is dangerous everywhere. Roman is a nasty, elite sniper with his kickboxing. His four-fight win streak that he has is all via KO TKO, and it's all happened since September of 2022. He fought three times just in 2023 alone. Anthony Fluffy Hernandez fluffed up the word fluffy there, but ignore that. We're going to skip past it. Only fought once in 2023, but he did get two wins in 2022. He had the crazy comeback victory over Rodolfo Vieira, who just got a victory last weekend. Don't sleep on the main card opener at 185 pounds. The prelim headliner is former title challenger and number 3 ranked women's strawweight Amanda Leigh Mosch taking on Mackenzie Dern, number 7 ranked in the world. Taking this fight on short notice is Mackenzie Dern. She was supposed to fight, I can't remember if it was later this month or on the UFC 299 card sometime in March. And I forget who she was booked to fight, but this is a much bigger opportunity. She's coming in on short notice to take on someone in the top 3. And she's lost two of her last 3 fights here. The only win is against Angela Hill. If she can come in on short notice and beat someone as dangerous as Amanda Leigh Mosch, that would be a big statement. And for Leigh Mosch, prior to losing her title fight last August to Zhang Wei Li, had won 2 straight fights via finish. She submitted Michelle Watterson Gomez and knocked out Marina Rodriguez, which tore me up because Marina had done everything to earn a title shot, never got it. Took this fight against Amanda instead and then lost. But that's a shame. I digress once more. I think this is a very fun fight. 3 versus 7, prelim headliner, 2 prominent names in this fight. Big bounce back spot for Amanda. Bigger bounce back spot for Mackenzie Dern. And you pair it with her chance to crack into the top 5 and the top 3 for the first time in her career. And there's good fights throughout the rest of the card as well. The number 15 ranked heavyweight, Marcos Rogério de Lima, is looking to bounce back after his knockout loss to Derek Lewis. He's taking on Justin Taffa. The phenom Rinya Nakamura is back at 135 pounds, taking on Carlos Vera. He's a minus 1200 favorite, if that tells you anything about how the odds makers think that fight is going to play out. The dude is legit. He's a threat, and he will make a name for himself at 135 pounds. You look at the other fighters on this card. Oban Elliott, a big guy making his debut in the UFC. He's a minus 300 favorite. Opening the card is the number 15 ranked women's flyweight Andrea Lee, the veteran, taking on Miranda Maverick. Miranda's kind of faltered these past couple of years, her past few fights, but she's still hanging around and has a chance to get back in to the top 15. And now that we are done with UFC 298, if that was that long of a discussion for this card, I'm in for some trouble with 299 and 300, but I wouldn't have it any other way. But we've got one area of topic left to discuss, and that is UFC Atlantic City, New Jersey, Fight Night headlined on March 30th by, we found out today, Aaron Blanchfield and Manon Fiore. They have been promoted to the five-round main event. The winner of that is sure to be next for a flyweight title fight against Alexa Grasso, or the winner of the trilogy between Alexa Grasso and Valentina Shevchenko. That is TBD, but I love that they are getting this spot. Erin Blanchfield is from New Jersey, so she's getting to headline in front of her home state. Manon Fiore, Erin Blanchfield, these two have been surging together in the women's flyweight division. They've separated themselves from the rest of the young up-and-coming prospects at 125 pounds. So I'm excited for them to get that opportunity. And we got a new co-main event. Vicente Luque was originally going to be the main event against Sean Brady. Sean Brady had to pull out due to injury. In steps Joaquin Buckley, getting a big opportunity here to launch himself from unranked to the top 10 if he can get the job done. So obviously, well, there will be a more in-depth breakdown when the time comes for that card. But that's the bit of news that came out for Atlantic City. Hats off to the ladies getting the top of the bill. And kudos to Joaquin Buckley stepping in here on, you know, a month and a half's notice in a big spot against a dangerous Vicente Luque. And that is it for today's episode of the Below Average Joe's MMA Show. It felt good to get a long episode out again. We've been in a stretch of some shorties, but when a card's this big, I'm going to give all of my thoughts, hit on all of the major storylines that I can, some of the X's and O's as well. I love this fight game. I love you all, and I appreciate you if you're still listening at this point in the episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Follow along on your favorite audio listening platform. If you are new, drop a rating as it helps the show grow. Follow along and join the community on social media, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, at TheBAJMMA, and subscribe to the YouTube channel as well for more timely and edited clips there. I appreciate you. Enjoy the fights this weekend. Enjoy time with friends, family, whoever you're watching the fights with. Eat you some good food while you're at it, and I'll catch you for the recap on Monday.